On this episode of Interview in Indies, we talk to Zoo from Berserk Boy Games, and we talk about Berserk Boy, of course, Berserk Boy Bits, which is their upcoming project, and Zoo's recent trip to Canada. If you want to support the show and get the episodes a few days early, you can subscribe to the show on Patreon, and of course, enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to Interview in Indies, Episode 9. I'm the host, Burr, and today we're joined by the developer of the great game Berserk Boy, Zoodasham. Hopefully I said that right. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking your time.
Thank you very much for having me, mate. And yeah, it's Zoo. If you put it together, it's Zoodasham. So yeah, pretty on.
Zoodasham. I see everyone calling you Zoo. So I was thinking maybe I should have just gone with that. But
no, it's great. It's great.
Well, my first question for everyone that ever joins this little podcast show is, what got you into game development as a whole? What got you in here?
What got me into making video games, as in like Berserk Boy, or just like in general making video games?
It could be either one, really. Like, what's driving force?
Well, the driving force is probably sprites, like pixel sprites. I was obsessed with those as a kid. I'd make little fan comics with sprites and stuff. So I guess I was very, very, very obsessed with pixel art growing up. But never into video games, like creation. It was more just like, the pixel side of it. I'd say I wanted to create video games when I turned, I don't know, like 18 and 19 maybe. And then thought, maybe I should do something with this. Like, I started doing pixel art, right? And then eventually it was just like, it just progressed from making pixels to maybe instead of just making a move in isolation, I should make a video game because I like video games. So yeah, I'd say it started from a love of art and animation, really.
Did you learn how to like code and everything with your love of pixel art as well, so you could like make a full game yourself?
Yeah, so that was the catalyst for everything. So everything I can do in terms of programming or level design or game design, yeah, it all stems from just brute forcing it, really. It was just, you know, just like I didn't go to university or college for game design. It was literally like everyone like just sit at home, watch YouTube videos and ask questions and, you know, poke the right people. That's it, really. You know, just forced it out.
Self-taught with everything. That's very impressive. Yeah. Saving the money as well by not going to school. With pixel art being your favorite thing, I guess, like the driving force, was there any game inspirations to you that was really like, man, I love this game. It inspires me to do everything. Because there's obviously a lot of incredible pixel art in video games from the past and present.
So true, yeah. I'd say the main ones, and I think they might be evident in most of my work, is Mega Man and Sonic. Like, I am basic when it comes to my inspirations. I really like those two growing up. Like, it was like my personality was, oh, I like Sonic and Mega Man. So as when I was younger, it was those two. And as I've grown up, I've started playing like loads of different things. So yeah, I'd say Sonic and Mega Man were the driving force, really.
So, I mean, I've never really played too much Sonic and Mega Man. I did. Okay. Let me ask you this. This might get controversial quickly. It's not pixel. Did you like Sonic Adventure 2? Because I played that game for the first time this past year, and I could not stand it.
Well, what was your... Why not?
I there was just something about the game. I just did not like the mechanics of it. Like, it was going from all these different characters. There was something about it that I just didn't really like, and I felt bad because everybody said, oh, Sonic Adventure 2, it's great. And I'm just like, oh my god, no. I do not like this.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, before I started, I loved it, but I played it on the Dreamcast as a kid.
That's what I was thinking. Like, maybe I needed to play it when it first came out.
I think, yeah, I feel like if you go into it blind now, it probably feels a bit like, I mean, even the Sonic's movement is a little bit jank, right? Like on the thumbsticks, like he's really like sensitive, I think, and like,
oh yeah,
yeah, it doesn't feel brilliant. But I think at the time, I was just happy to have a Sonic game that was 3D and that wasn't Sonic Adventure 1. So I don't know. Yeah, I liked it, but I get
just,
what you mean.
I just had to check because you said you're a big Sonic fan, which I just assumed it was because I didn't play it, which I guess makes sense. How about any games you've played recently? I usually ask that towards the end, but we're on the subject. Any games you've been playing recently?
Recently, I've been playing... Actually, recently, I've just been playing Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. That just came out like a couple of days ago, right? That and UFO 50 is pretty good.
Oh, I haven't seen a lot of people playing UFO 50. That looks incredible.
It's sweet, dude. It's fun. But yes, Dragon Ball Z is taking all my time at the moment. What about yourself?
For me, oh god, what have I been playing? Well, as we're making this, Steam Next Fest is about to happen, but I've been playing a lot of Peglin. I don't know why.
Oh, nice.
I've been hooked into that Peglin.
No, that game, it'll get you.
I know. I'm trying to like beat it on like every difficulty enhancer slowly but surely, because like they have the crucible effect that which makes it harder, and I'm just getting my butt absolutely handed to me while I've been trying to do that. All right, you mentioned Dragon Ball Z. This is going all over the place, and I love it. But I saw that your Twitter banner on your personal account was actually One Piece, so I need to ask you. I haven't been able to watch One Piece in like a year and a half, but are you up to date on absolutely everything with One Piece?
I am not.
Oh, thank God, I'm not either.
No, I'm not. I only got into it like just shy of 3 years ago. I've been reading it, and no way, hell yeah. It's hard to catch up, right? It can get draining sometimes, but I absolutely love it. I just like forfeited the anime at some point and just started reading it because I just thought I can't watch everything. So yeah, I'm just reading through it, and I just went the flight. I just went on a big long flight, and I just went through like 100 chapters. So I'm close, but I'm not there yet.
I mean, I only got to like past the Fishman Island arc, so I'm like, and I was watching every episode. I think my partner says the same thing, that they just like to read because it goes by faster, which makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. 1200 episodes. Sorry, I just had to ask that because
it's a good question.
Who's your one favorite One Piece character? Let's see how similar we are with this.
Luffy? Question mark.
I mean, everyone's a Luffy fan. How can you not love Luffy? He's just so happy all the time.
He's the best.
I love Luffy, Zoro, Chopper, Robin, all those. The usual fanfare.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There are times where I'm like, oh, I like Sanji so much because he's like hilarious at this point, but then it always just comes back to Luffy when he does like
anything,
something crazy. it's just.
Oh, but, man. Yeah. So you said you were reading One Piece on a flight, 100 chapters. Now, I assume that flight was your recent trip to Canada where you were in Calgary for, I'm blanking on it. It's obviously a game developer convention. What was that like, I guess?
Yeah, mate, that was it was Alberta Game Series in Calgary. The event itself was lovely. It was a lot of fun to talk to people from like Canada and other developers who I'd never get a chance to talk to. Canada itself was phenomenal, just so much fun. I went there to do a talk on game development and like the struggles I had and like the things I learned about making a video game and like getting into the industry. So that was pretty chaotic because there was a lot I wanted to say and a lot of struggles I had. So yeah, it was good. But yeah, I whenever I talk about games, I feel like you should be saying loads of positive things. But I also feel like it's good to like equip people with the knowledge of like it's not all perfect, and if they're like passionate enough, that information doesn't really matter. Like they'll still make their game, but they'll just go in a little bit more well equipped. So that's a summary of my trip basically.
Now, if you want to share, you don't have to if you don't want to, but what were some of the biggest struggles for you while making Berserk Boy, I guess?
For us, I'd say, I mean, obviously the whole development cycle was insane because it was going from nothing basically to having a completed project. But I'd say time zones was tough in terms of like actual working. Like, getting a work flow, because you know we destroy all our sleeping cycles. I was living in Japan at the time, and it was just all over the shop. And then we had someone in Indonesia and America and the UK, so syncing up was difficult. That's still difficult on our new project as well. I don't know how people get around that. I just destroy my sleep schedule. And then in terms of actual development, honestly, it feels like a blur now that I'm thinking back. But yeah, I'd say the work with different time zones is quite challenging.
Yeah, I can imagine. You got people that are 12 hours behind you. It's like 3 p.m. your time. You're probably wanting to work, and then it's like 2 a.m. somewhere else, and you're like, well, I need to wait 6 hours for this guy to wake up. I did not realize you were in Japan, because I saw a tweet from, Liam Edwards that said it was a miracle that, like, Berserk Boy even launched. And I was thinking, man, Liam Edwards even knows Zoo, because I know he is in Japan. He did Curse to Golf. And the Tanuki game that is a mailman. I'm blanking on the name of that one.
Yeah,
because he said Berserk Boy was a miracle, and I was just like, "Oh, I need to dig into that. What made it a miracle?" Now it just that makes sense.
Yeah, no, Liam's brilliant. I was in Japan for 6 years, just shy of seven. I was pretty into the scene there. I knew a lot of the developers in Tokyo, not all of them, but a fair few in Tokyo, and a good chunk in Kyoto as well, where Liam's based. And I think what he's alluding to with it being a miracle is probably the NDA I've signed, which I can't go too deep into.
No,
but yes,
we had
a hiccup with one of our partners that we were working with, which did delay the game by 2 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was. When you asked what the biggest struggle was, I wanted to say it off the rip, but I thought, you know, I'll be a bit more reserved. But yeah, essentially, we had it's all sorted now, but we had an issue with a partner we were working with, and it's all like fixed up now. But there was a universe where Berserk Boy was just going to be cancelled, and it's crazy it came out in the end.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Two extra years. You have this project is probably like your baby. You love it so much. It's like an inspiration to you, from inspired by Sonic, Mega Man, and incredible artwork everywhere. And then there's 2 years of waiting. Oh my God.
Yeah, dude, it was tough. It was super tough.
It is out. It has been out since February of 2024 this year. Now, I saw that you tweeted that you got to play Berserk Boy on like an arcade machine while you were in Calgary. Was that like a surreal moment that you got to like physically play the game like on something like an arcade machine?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, that was, it was really cool. Surreal. Yeah. Just seeing it as well is just really phenomenal. Like, there's a couple of things devs like imagine at the start, like seeing it on the eShop is one of them, I think. Seeing it in physical is another one. And I didn't know, but now I know, maybe seeing it in an arcade machine is another one. So yeah, it's definitely one of those cool feelings.
A little old school for sure, because, you know, arcade machines are definitely not as big as they once were, but that's pretty awesome. Now, mm-hmm. You say like, eShop is one of those things that could be really good. And as we're recording this, the Steam Next Fest begins in like 4 hours. How valuable, I'm pretty sure Berserk Boy was in a Steam Next Fest the last year. How valuable do you find something like a Steam Next Fest?
Oh yeah. I mean, we've only done one, but we were lucky enough to be featured on the, you know, they have like the carousel at the top and they do the video at the start. Berserk Boy was featured in that video, and honestly, for our wish list, it catapulted it really, really high. I think it's super important to scream and shout about Next Fest, and you know, contact streamers and people who could be interested in playing your game and making sure the demo is being played during the event to sort of boost it in the algorithm. It's super important marketing beat, and I think developers now are also like making sure they align the Next Fest are allowed to have. It's like one Next Fest now with their launch date. So, you pick a Next Fest that's close to your launch date, and you sort of strategically like incorporate it into your marketing. So you could like launch a trailer or like a Next Fest trailer a week before, or like a few days before Next Fest, and get the buzz going for your demo, all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, the last like two Next Fest, I've played some games, and then I'm just like, I need these games to come out. And then like a week later, it's like, hey, this game is coming out in 2 months, and I'm just like, well, that's kind of perfect. I
Yeah.
love Steam Next Fest so much. It's one of my favorite. It's like Christmas for me as an adult. I just get all these little goodies that I get to play with for free, and then I can just add them to my wish list. Now, with Berserk Boy, also, I noticed that you guys were self-published. Is there a reason why to you did the self-publishing? Because I know a lot of people say you don't really need a publisher anymore, but they do some of the more tedious tasks for a developer.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, we were being published by a partner,
Oh, this is
and
probably
then
goes back to.
yeah, so we did have a traditional publisher who was going to do X, Y, and Z for Berserk Boy. We ended up going a different route. We actually paired up with SMG instead. They let us self-publish the title. They helped us like in terms of like dev kits, funds we need, or like just moving us across to the finish line. And then we chose to go for the self-publishing route. It was a struggle because you have to do all the marketing yourself. You have to do the Switch store back end and Steam store back end, and organize porting and localization. But I think it was worth it because now I can like say, oh, I know the back end of all this stuff as well. So, sorry, what was your question? Do you need publishing, or
I guess it was something like that. It was more so a
yeah, like,
reason for like your
oh, right,
self-publishing. But I guess you could answer. Do you think you need publishing? There ain't nothing wrong with
no, sorry, I thought I'd get
that.
on a tangent then,
No,
but
no worries. I love it when developers just start talking because I can just get so engrossed in it.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's a super open question. Like, I think developers should. I think there's nothing wrong with publishers, and I'm not one of those developers that say stay away from publishers. I think they can make developers' dreams come true. They can fund your project. They can do all like I said, localization, porting, all that jazz for you. But the developer needs to sort of have their head switched on whether they need a publisher or they don't need one. And if they do go for a publisher, are they going for one because it's a good one and they can help them, or are they going for one just because it's like the first one that's reached out to them and they think, oh, I've got a sign right now, and they don't look at the contract, and then they sign a terrible contract.
And
It's
then they
just,
make
yeah,
no
just
money, basically, and
yeah,
they're
exactly,
doomed.
right? Exactly. It's just all that due diligence. You've just got to like remember it's a business partnership. It's not like a fairy tale like thing. It's you're doing business with another company, so you both make money. So
What are some indicators for you that maybe a developer should lean towards a publisher towards doing it themselves?
I'd say the most important one is financial, right? If you have a project and it's a quality project, and you're working a job that gives you little to no time to work on the project, that publishers can allow you to work on that project full time by funding the development, right? I think that's super important. I also think if you can get your game done and you have no idea on, trailers and marketing and whatnot and outreach or stuff like that, they can also do a great job there. I think there's a place for publishers for sure. I think they're like important, but you just gotta know, I guess, what you want. That's the hardest part.
I mean, I imagine that's the hardest part of game development. That's like a dream of mine to help publish like indie games, but that just seems like so many variables involved with all that, and give me like 10 years.
That'd be
Now,
so cool.
that would be very nice. You said that the biggest struggles were time zones. So how big was the team behind Berserk Boy?
Yeah, so I think at one point, like in all the people that are touching the project, including like voice actors and musicians, sound designers, etc., like illustrators, I think we had like 15 people touch the project, maybe more. This is, I think 15 is slightly rounding up, but it could be maybe 17. But yeah, the core team was three of us. It started off with just me. And then, yeah, we expanded. So I'd say 3 to 15 would be the number. So yeah, it when I see the credits, it's just like crazy because there's so many names that pop up. So yeah, it's pretty awesome. You get to work with all these people.
It's just a shame the time zones exist, and it can be a little, it
Right.
can be a little
Right.
hard.
Yeah,
Now,
it gets hard.
but I mean, the game came out good. For people that don't know, Berserk Boy, it's like Mega Man. Do you want to describe Berserk Boy before I ask this next question for the people that may not understand it?
Yeah, 100% for sure. It wants to be a stylish, high speed action platformer that is very much like you said, inspired by Mega Man. But it tries to sort of do its own thing instead of projectiles and buster upgrades, you get movement upgrades and melee upgrades. So, yeah.
That's the game. Now, in the game, there's multiple different suits that give you the movement and power upgrades with, the flying, the underground, the ninja, that's the one I called it, and the lightning one. If there's another one, I'm sorry, I'm missing it. But are there any favorite suits for you or any of them that were the hardest to design around?
Oh yeah, amazing question. So my favorite one would be the lightning one, and that was also the most difficult to get right in terms of designing around. I think the soaring wind, the flying one, was the most difficult because it sort of destroyed all of the level designs. But that was something we just thought, whatever, let it happen. Give them the freedom. But yeah, for the lightning form, it was difficult because essentially I stripped most of the lightning form's abilities. Like he originally had like punching and sprinting and all this stuff. And then it was a super difficult decision to cut all this stuff that the suit had, essentially because the game felt very like messy, like it didn't have a core really. And this is very early on in development. And yeah, I made the decision to just get rid of sprinting, get rid of hand-to-hand combat, get rid of all this stuff, and just focus on the core mechanic of like dashing. And then it came, hey, how about every form just has like one traversal technique instead of like 1,000 moves, and it just becomes like a big mess of like, it's very much like first game syndrome where you see something cool and try to throw it in. I'd say that was a difficult, I mean, a good learning experience for me because now I know to focus on like certain things instead of trying to just like cram things into the game.
I remember when I was buying Berserk Boy, I read some reviews that were saying the lightning was the strongest suit. Obviously, I feel like that's always personal preference. I personally like the flying one a lot because, just get to fly around. It's funny that you
Oh yeah.
say that you strip so much from the lightning. Imagine how much more powerful it would have been if everything stuck with it.
Yeah, dude, for real. Yeah, you could literally just like blitz through a level, and I remember like testing it before like we pitched or something and playing it and playing it and playing it, and I was like, yeah, this doesn't even feel like a game. I can just like destroy everything. Like this is too much. Time to dial it back. So yeah, genuinely, it was OP.
Now, inside the game as well, there's a lot of collectibles, which is obviously always very nice with the resistance soldiers and the medals. And if you collected enough of them, you get like an EX stage, which is just like a much harder version of the current stage, if I'm not mistaken. Were those stages a lot harder to develop and design around compared to normal stages, or were they just like thrown together like, oh, this is easy?
Yeah, it'd be the latter. It felt a lot better because there's no like architectural integrity in those stages, right? There's just like blocks float in, and like you can just like put hazards, like just put them wherever you want, and it doesn't have to sort of make sense Whereas like in a traditional stage, you sort of like have to build up to things, and like there's like, there's actual like architectural integrity in terms of like the walls. Like you can't just have like, well, you can if you want have like floating walls and all that stuff. I like to sort of like make things like look like they, like if there's a floating wall, it would have like two chains hanging it, right, or something. But for the EX missions, it was just like whatever, really, whatever feels fun, and you could just do whatever because it's all like a digital world, so none of it really had to make sense. So that's why it kind of felt not, I wouldn't say more fun, but it felt like a, it was more freeing to make those stages.
Most definitely, and probably they're good for speed runs as well, because I didn't get to get any to the EX stages because I was absolutely terrible, but I did see them, and I after seeing them, I'm like, man, I should probably install this on the Steam Deck and start playing this again. I guess I could ask that as well for designing and coding the game. I'm pretty sure the game is absolutely everywhere, isn't it? Is it? It's on Xbox and PlayStation too, right?
No, so
Oh, is it only on Switch?
it's only on Switch at the moment. And then we have Steam as well. But we
But
may have news, some cool news, in the future.
I was gonna say is the plans, but I think I'll leave that, I'll let that sit there.
Question mark,
Yeah,
maybe.
question mark, mate. I guess I could ask then, was designing for the Switch hard? And I guess the Steam Deck, I imagine it runs perfectly fine on Steam Deck if you got it running on Switch.
Right. Yeah, so to answer your question, yeah, it was difficult for us to get running on the Switch. We actually outsourced a programmer to help us out getting it working on the Switch. A lot of the issues were internal. Like it was, we didn't really plan too smoothly for the Switch. Like there was a lot of like we had memory issues, and we weren't like handling instances properly. So it was a bit of a juggle. Just it wasn't too bad, but I remember the reason I say it is because I remember like running it on the Switch, and it's it's like a smooth 60 frames on PC, but running on the Switch and it was going like 10 frames and it was
Oh.
like stuttering, and we were like, what is going on? But again, it's just like you learn these things, right? And now for the next project, we're like thinking in advance, are we handling our instances properly? Are we deactivating them? Are we doing our texture groups properly and stuff like that? So yeah, be ready to be like optimal when you port to these consoles.
It's funny because every time I ask about the processes from other developers getting their games on consoles, everyone always says the Switch is the worst because of how old the hardware is, and it's Nintendo. So I guess every game, I should just assume every game is just awful to get onto the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, you'd be correct.
I guess I could also ask now about the physical copy, because if I remember correctly, there was a physical copy that came with a pin release for Berserk Boy. Was that a something that you worked with the kind of the people that helped publish but let you be self-published? Did you just reach out, or what was the process of getting it physical?
Oh yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, we just announced that physical. So they actually reached out to us at Gamescom. They put in a meeting, and I chatted with them, and they seemed lovely. So and they were very excited about Berserk Boy. So yeah, I was like, let's make this happen. And yeah, to be honest, I've been pretty hands off with like the merchandise that comes with the game. I've just been like approving
Yeah, I
designs, really.
imagine that's all like
Yeah.
outside work because you made the game, you did all the hardest stuff, you
Yeah.
let them deal with all that
Yeah,
other extras. Yeah, I 100%
exactly.
get that. I guess I could ask this though, because Gamescom, I'm pretty sure you went to PAX East as well, which
I
I
did, yeah.
went to. I should have said hi to you, I'm sorry. But I guess
Next time.
like next time I'm trying to get to PAX East again or PAX West. I guess I could ask, do you feel like gaming conventions, even if you don't have the money to like put up a booth and everything, as a developer, do you think it's really worth it to get out to conventions and get your game, out there?
Yeah, from my personal experience, I think it is. But you also have to be willing to sort of put one foot forward as well. Like you can go there with no game, but still, meet a lot of people, meet them in person. And as a developer, if you're trying to talk to publishers, you can let them put a face to a name and chat with them and show them your game in person. As a developer to developer, you can make good relationships. And like yourself, if we'd met, at PAX, we probably have done this sooner or something. I don't know.
Oh,
But
yeah,
yeah, I think it's
100%. I would have
brilliant.
messaged you like for the first episode.
No,
Like, oh, I met this guy at PAX. I gotta talk to him.
yeah, like they build good relations, I feel. And in an industry where we're always just like at home on our computers and chatting to people on Twitter and Discord and whatnot, I think it's worth it alone to meet these people and chat to them and just get some like interaction with like-minded people. But if you want to promote your game, I think it's also a good chance to see people play your game. I love having people play Desert Boy on booths and just stepping back and I don't say I'm the developer, but I like to watch like and see all the pain points and see people struggling, and I want to say something, but I can't backseat game, right? So it's just like it's a real good experience to see people like playing your game, and you learn what the pain points are and what sucks really, and you can just take it all in.
I imagine it's a surreal feeling because every time I've gotten to talk with developers at PAX and play their games, it's always a crazy feeling. Like, I was just standing watching a game at PAX, and then the developer walked up to me and was like, "Do you want to play?" and just handed me a Steam Deck. And I'm like, "Oh, cool. Awesome. I guess I'm playing this game now." It's just, I think everyone, if you're definitely developers, indie game fans, PAX is always a must go for me. I absolutely love PAX.
Totally agree, mate. Yeah.
Now you've talked about your current projects, and I guess I could say, is the big current project another game that you're working on in the Berserk Boy universe with Berserk Boy Bits?
Yes, it is. It wasn't intended to be as big as a project it's become.
That's every developer, I feel like.
right. Right, 100%. We planned to just like make this sort of like a fun thing. We saw the success of Rush's Retirement and got super inspired to make something in our own, our own flavor instead of like farming. It was more like auto battling and card collecting. But yeah, we're in a position where we can work on this game and not have to super worry about what we're doing at the moment. Which so we're like, hey, how about we add this and we add this and we add like this mode and we add all this, and it's just like, yeah, you know what? Why not? Let's do it. So yeah, it's become the next project. It wasn't going to be, but yeah, I think we're going to focus on this project now.
Do you is there like what's our what are some harder things developing a game that's like meant to be an idle game to an extent, where you just kind of have it at the bottom of like a second monitor, compared to developing a game that is full attention?
Right, yeah, that's an awesome question because I'm constantly thinking this. Like, number one, testing is so difficult, right? Because you can't put your sh you can't like I'm constantly imagining what the player would be doing whilst this is going off. So I'm thinking like, if I add in like an alert here and the player is working, will it be too intrusive? Like, there's a lot of different like thinking processes, I think, in making like a quote unquote idle game, right? Whereas with that boy, you fire it up and, oh, this is too hard, this is not fun, the tutorial's not tutorialized enough, or like there's too many words. You can like work those things out. But I feel like testing these idle games, obviously, if you didn't have like a fast forward button, would be a nightmare because you have to like simulate, what people are doing, because you don't know what how people are playing these games. Is there full attention on it? Are they doing something else? Yeah, it's just like finding a balance, I guess, of giving the player like, can they interact with it when they want to, or like, can they let it be when they don't want to be? Yeah, it's just finding a weird balance at the moment. You can probably tell how I'm describing it. I'm still
Yeah,
sort of
it's
working
a.
out.
I can't even imagine trying to make an idle game, because you want to throw all these cool things in, probably. But then, like you said, it's like, oh wait, I don't want to, maybe interrupt their writing a 26-page thesis paper, and then I mess them up
Yeah,
because Berserk Boy Bits.
100%.
Yeah, I saw some of the battles on Twitter because I've been keeping my eye on this because, you know, I like a good idle game. I played Rusty's Retirement. Well, I didn't really play it. I just kind of let it sit there. But
hell yeah.
The battles kind of reminded me of Mega Man Battle Network. Is there like small Battle Network inspiration there to get like all the Mega Man style games inspired by you?
Yeah, so that happens. Yeah, so it is inspired by Mega Man Battle Network. And yeah, that sort of happened organically. Like, we weren't planning on doing other styles of Mega Man games, but it was just more like we had a couple of meetings and we're just talking about how we would do it. And then, yeah, Mega Man Battle Network came up like, oh, yeah, isn't that in the PC anyway? And, you know, it sort of like flew into it. But yeah, super inspiration in terms of the battle grid. The game doesn't actually play like Mega Man. Like, obviously, it's an idle game, right? And there's a lot of, like, decorations and stuff. It's also heavily inspired by Digimon. Like, we have a lot of creatures you can collect. There's, like, hundreds of little monsters that you can have on your screen, and you look after them and stuff. But in terms of presentation, yeah, I mean, it has to be Mega Man Battle Network for us, so... Yeah, good eye.
I didn't realize there was creatures, because I saw that, you know, there's the battles, and then I saw, like, setting up furniture in, like, a little house, having your own little area. I didn't realize there was little monsters. How hard is it to come up with monsters and, like, little collectibles like that for an idle game like this? Do you use a lot of Berserk Boy assets for that, or just all original?
No, yeah, we've totally gone, like, crazy with this. So, like, we're working with a new artist on this project, and I'm not doing all the character designs on this one, and my brief is go as crazy as you can, just wacky and wild, you know. And sometimes they're like, how wacky and wild can we do? And I was, you know, I said something like, I'm trying to look at this picture, I uploaded a picture recently, I don't have any examples on here. Damn. But yeah, we ended up coming up with a monster that's got four legs and it's just a pencil, you know. It's just like whatever is works and looks fun, and, you know, there's no like rules really. It's just give like a bunch of variety to these little guys, and that's it really. It's just super fun, I think, for us to make it as well, and hopefully it's fun for people to collect them.
I mean, a fun little refreshing take, just a silly little time. Is the core like the three core team that works on Berserk Boy, are they all still on this project along with that new artist?
The two of us are. We're talking to one of them to get them back on for a smaller role. But because of the nature of this project, and it's just like in terms of like how hands-on it is, and, you know, it's definitely smaller scope, right? Not everyone is on this project, but yeah, some people are returning, and we obviously got some new people as well. But I'd say it's a mix between some of the old team and new team. But maybe if you do like more actual Berserk Boy stuff, it'd be more of like, hey, everyone, we're doing the big game now, so
get on board. We need you again.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any ideas? Like, I imagine you're a game developer, so you're always thinking of ideas. Do you have any ideas on the next, I guess, bigger project, if you want to share that? Because I know, you know, you don't want people those ideas.
I don't mind sharing at all. I won't share the core element of it, or even the themes of it, because it's just, I want it to be wacky and different, and that's sort of where my mind is at the moment with like creating stuff. It's make something new and like weird. Maybe that'll change. I don't know. I'm really into Junji Ito at the moment, so maybe that's what it is. I do want to make more games, and I do also want to make more Berserk Boy games, but I also want to make non Berserk Boy games. So like new IPs, and, you know, move into 3D and move into like other areas. And yeah, I'm really like, yeah, I'm always like writing down new stories and new ideas for like a non-Berserk Boy IP. So yeah, see how it goes. Maybe the next one will be just like something completely fresh and totally different. That's where I am at the moment. Who knows? Maybe I'll just do like Berserk Boy 2, though. I don't know.
I
but.
mean, anything can work, but it's always fun to just get the ideas rolling. You said you want to maybe do 3D. Are you like a little, have you like, are you scared by the idea of maybe doing 3D? Because I know some people say it's a lot harder than 2D. I obviously don't know, but.
No, you're 100% correct. I'm scared because I have no idea how I'd work in 3D. I don't think I know how to work Unity at all. I don't know the UI. I don't know how anything works. So it'd be a learning curve for sure. But just like probably like yourself, I just want to do like new things
Yeah, you
all
gotta.
the
It's
time.
always good to learn new things. If you learn something new every day, you're gonna live a very fulfilled life, I feel.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Now, was Berserk Boy the first major project that you've made? Like any other like little side projects that I, because I couldn't really find anything. I was trying to find like maybe you had like an itch.io, and I couldn't find anything. Do you got any so anything in the past?
So I did do games in the past. A lot of them I like just never saw the light of day. I did a lot of like Naruto fan games and Sonic fan games and just never really released them because they were just terrible. I did a couple of game jams, and I've freelanced on a couple of projects. But like recently, I announced I was working on the Power Rangers
Oh,
game
I
as an
saw that
animator.
tweet. I thought that was super cool. That game looks awesome.
So I do like move around. There's a few indie games that I've like helped with recently, and they've not announced my work yet. But in terms of old stuff, there's not a lot of old things out there. I did have an old pixel art page, but I just nuked it.
Don't want to share the past too much.
It was just terrible, terrible like redraws of like Mega Man and Sonic and
Like
all that.
you get to look back at the where you started compared to where you are now with your own full-fledged game. That's still got to be a pretty cool feeling.
No, yeah, it is good. I do love like sort of looking back, and I think more people should do that as well, because it's so easy to get like lost in the sauce of like making what you're making now. You forget, like dial it back like 3 4 years ago. It might have not even existed, or there is a timeline where you don't pursue it. So yeah, I totally agree.
Now, you said you did some work on the Power Rangers game. Did they reach out to you on that for, I imagine, just freelance stuff like that, like you said? Did they reach out or did you reach out to them?
No, yeah, they reached out. I posted some work. I don't post personal stuff really anymore. I don't have much time. But during that period, I think it was, I don't remember when it was, to be honest, but I posted some work and they DM'd me from that, and we just got chatting and we had a meeting, and I got into the project from there. So yeah, I guess post your work on social.
Yeah, that's crazy. Just it wasn't even like a reply to them. You just posted some work that you did and that you were proud of, and next thing you know, it got you a little bit of extra money.
I think most of my gigs are via were sorry via just posting on social media. Someone would DM me saying, hey, can I have a commission of this, or like, hey, can you help me with my project here, or something, something like that. So Twitter's, I mean, it was very good.
It still probably has its uses, but if you're gonna say, like Twitter kind of stinks now, I can also kind of agree. Like, because I'm kind of in like somewhat a similar sphere as you. Like, I don't make the games, I just play them. But I say that social media is like an essential tool for creators, whether it be just a streamer or a developer, because there's so much reach that you have. But I just absolutely hate posted on social media. So I guess I'll ask, how valuable do you find it, even if you're someone like me who doesn't like it?
No, I'm maybe in the same boat. I don't love social media, especially not as much as I used to. But I find it very valuable. Like, you have to sort of, like you said, with your work, I'm sure you have to use it to reach out to people you want in the show or games you want to stream,
Yep.
right? Similar with me, I want people to play my game and know about it. So I need to like post it to make that happen, right? So maybe we connected on Twitter originally. And then that's how we're, yeah. So I think it's super important. Treat it like, you know, however you want to treat it. You can, I mean, nothing's wrong with shitposting and stuff. I think that's brilliant. But if you need it for work, you know, use it for work. If you need it for reaching out, yeah, I think it's super important, and we should use it properly, because it can be really beneficial for like work, yeah, essentially.
I mean, I found Berserk Boy because of Twitter, to be honest. I remember seeing like a trailer for it. I remember like a YouTuber was talking about it, and I was like, oh, well, yeah. I was like, wow, this game looks pretty freaking great. Add that to the wish list. And then I connected with you because of Twitter, even though I don't like posting on it. Would you say that maybe marketing on social media could have been one of the harder side of things with like marketing the game as a whole?
Yeah, I think my issue, not issue, but like my like pain point, I guess, would have been I didn't reach out to streamers enough, or content creators enough, and that goes back to not having a publisher. So I think within my bubble it was pretty good, but expanding like beyond it was yeah, like you said, it was probably an issue for me. That's how I feel personally. I mean, the game did pretty well, but it could have, you know, it could have skyrocketed into like Oblivion. Maybe, I don't know,
I
probably
think
not,
it
but
could have. There's not too
but
many Mega Man inspired games that actually, you know, play really well like Berserk Boy or even something like Gravity Circuit.
yeah, I appreciate that. But yeah, no, it's a super good valid point, and I feel like maybe, yeah, it's a good point to say here, if you're making a video game and you're getting lots of traction on social media, don't be afraid to take that traction to, you know, like streamers like yourself and other people who would get more eyes on it that are outside of your bubble. So yeah, that's a good point. I
Twitter
should
can be good.
remember that more.
So,
Yeah, I should remember that
yeah,
more.
you can use that for your next projects.
Yeah, 100%.
That's kind of all the questions that I had about the Berserk Boy and the game in life. I guess I could ask one more question for you before I take up too much of your time. And it's if do you have any questions for me, the gamer and the content creator?
I do. Oh, so I'm sure you get spammed a lot with, "Hey, please play my game. Please, can you give me some coverage?" What makes a game stand out in that first opening that makes you think, "You know what? I'll play this one."
Usually, for me, they combined games that I like, or they somehow just sell it really well. And honestly, for like combining two games I love into one, or just two more well-known games, I don't even have to love them. Like if you messaged me and was like, Mega Man meets Sonic, let's just say that, I would have been like, oh shit, that's two pretty big names. Let me check this out. And that's just, but then like also, they need to have good structure in their email. I just made a video on a game called Rogue Waters, which is a tactics pirate roguelike game. I think it's a great game, but one big negative for the game is I could not find a media kit anywhere. Like I had no assets whatsoever to make a thumbnail or anything like that. So like having like a media kit in the email, a Steam page describing the game well, and just, you know, treating me like an actual person, because I get a lot of messages that say like, you have 12,000 subscribers? That's really cool. You have created such a great community. And I'm just like, do you say this to everybody?
I'm sure they'd love to play my game to see my game.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And I'm just like, I need some, like I'm just a dude. I'm just one guy doing everything. I need some personalization in that, 'cause
Got ya.
like a few weeks, like even just this last week, I was at the vet with my cat. She's fine. But I was at the vet just reading some emails, and I saw one that caught my eye because it was like, hey, you should try out my roguelite. It's kind of like Dead Cells or something like that. And then the person that sent it, they were completely honest. They were like, yeah, you probably get tons of emails, all that, but here's my game. They sold it well. They had great screenshots, great links. And I was like, I'm going to try to play this game. So yeah, just personalization and selling other games with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying you're inspired by bigger games or that you combined two different bigger games into one, because I feel if it's unique enough, the person will play it.
Right, that's awesome. That's I should note some of that down. But yeah, that's brilliant advice.
I mean, yeah, there's I get so many emails, like you said. I'm sure every creator gets millions of emails, and as much as I want to cover everything, it's just not really possible, sadly, because I'm just one guy doing everything. And a lot of people are like, oh, make sure you ask for sponsorships. And that's another thing. If you have like sponsor opportunity in there, I know indie developers don't have the budget to sponsor a lot of people, but if you do sneak those words in there, you might catch my eye a little bit more too.
Got you. Noted.
Any more questions for the creator? It's okay,
That
dude.
was probably the main one, because I am curious, how on the other side, like how it is, and I'm sure it looks very fun that you get to play all these games, but it's in reality it's stressful, right? So
Yeah.
it's fun but also stressful.
The same with
So
probably
yeah,
development, probably even more
right,
stressful
of course.
developing. Like, it's like, oh, you get to make this game. And it's like, yeah, but there's like 10,000 lines of code, and I have to get an artist, and I have to market it, and then if it flops.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I wanted to know a little bit on your side of how that was, but that was awesome.
Yeah, I love that question. Well, that's everything that I have to say. I guess any closing remarks, anything you want to sell to the people, I guess.
Berserk Boy is out. Get it? It's pretty good.
I can agree.
And we're working on a new game called Berserk Bits, which is pretty cool. But I can't tell you if it's good yet because it's not.
It
So,
will be good. I promise you that.
thank
I've been following it. Wishlist it.
you. Thank you. Yeah, and wishlist it. Please, yeah, that's helpful. And yeah, thank you very much for having me, mate. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for taking the time. I absolutely loved it and I appreciate it. And if you ever want to come back, just let me know.
Oh yeah, maybe when Berserk Bits is like gearing up, let's like punch base and be like, hi. The game was okay in
Yeah,
the
100%. We can revisit this
end.
episode.
Awesome, mate.
Thanks for everyone watching Interview in Indies. This was a fun one, and big shout out again to Zoo for taking the time. Everyone, go wishlist Berserk Boy bits and buy Berserk Boy because I know you have money. Thanks for listening or watching this episode of Interview in Indies. Big shout out to Zoo for taking some time out of their busy schedule to come onto the show and talk. I loved every minute of it. If you're an indie developer and you want to get on the show, just DM me on Twitter or shoot me an email. And if you want to get the shows a few days early, you can subscribe to us on Patreon. Thanks again for watching or listening, and we'll see you next time.